You've worked for Capra and Hitchcock and John Ford. Could you talk about the differences in their directorial style as it affected your performances and how they were able to react with you to get what you wanted and what they wanted?
Well, I think Ford and Hitchcock have a lot in common. This is sort of a special case, this picture. But usually, Hitchcock and Ford are visual people. They think of the motion picture as a visual medium, which I think is what it is. Both of them actually don't have too much respect for the spoken word, especially Ford. Remember, we'd have rehearsals, or what he called rehearsals. We would get over in the corner of the stage and sit around a table, and we'd read through the scene. And invariably, he'd turn around after we'd finished the scene. He'd say, "You fellas have the same script I have. I don't see any of that stuff you were saying. And I don't have this script." He said, and he'd tear. Several, he'd say, "Try it without these three pages." And it's amazing the number of times that it was much better without the. Without them. But as I say, Ford, a visual man, using the medium visually. Hitchcock also, a visual thing. As I say, this was a little different, but as I say, what he tried to do here was make an absolutely static setup scene visually and emotionally exciting. I think Capra seems to sort of combine the two things. Capra has great respect for the spoken word. Capra seems to combine the idea of the spoken word with the idea of the visual aspect that is so necessary in films. It's awfully hard to find too many defects in any of these three men, as far as I'm concerned.
Looking from what we've seen during the entire series, it would seem that there's not that much difference. I mean, there is, but they're all, I would say, geniuses in the sense of getting the things that they want and making them as timeless as they are.
Actually, they have an ability. It's a mysterious type thing because you can't put your finger on it, and a lot of people have tried to analyze it. They're able to get story on the screen visually. And as I say, this is it's a very hard thing to explain. It's a very hard thing to analyze. None of them do much directing as such. As I said before, the rehearsals were a joke, the idea of sitting around. Hitchcock, never rehearsed very much at all. I remember, and never talked too much about them. I remember Kim Novak came up to Hitchcock on the third, fourth day of the picture we were doing, and she said, "Mr. Hitchcock, I don't quite understand now this character I'm playing, the relevance that she has to this situation here. I feel that I, under these conditions, would move more in a slightly different way. And Hitchcock said, "Kim, it's only a movie. Don't." And Kim didn't say anything more. And she was darn good in the picture, too. She's a good actress.
We ran The Spirit of St. Louis last night. Speaking of visual storytelling, that is a difficult film to tell because it all takes place practically in the cabin of The Spirit of St. Louis. But I was wondering how, in the sense of able to sustain a type of more or less cerebral acting. You had to get his thoughts across without really enunciating them.
Yeah, well, of course, he had an awful lot going for you there, you know. In the airplane, that tiny little thing in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and the idea of the flashbacks during the time, it had an awful lot going for you. The idea of getting drowsier and falling asleep. Matter of fact, before the picture started, I met Charles Lindbergh, and I suddenly found that I had a whole lot of questions to ask him, but I couldn't think of any at the moment.
And
I finally said, in the movie, we sort of made this tremendous emphasis on the fact that he was getting drowsy and he was going to fall asleep, which he did. And almost ended the flight. But I said, we have this dramatic thing of you fighting drowsiness and fighting to keep awake, and it soon becomes the most important and the most dangerous thing of the whole thing. When did you really feel that you were getting so tired that you might not make it? He said, I never got asleep. I never was tired at all. Well, that shot me down there. I'll have to try some other tack on that. But as I say, and with the Lindbergh thing, you had an awful lot going for you. As a matter of fact, there was a big argument whether to take the fly clear across the ocean or not. We decided to let the fly off in Newfoundland. And Lindbergh told me he was glad the fly got off at Newfoundland.
What was his reaction to the film? Did he ever make any comment about it to you?
Yeah, he called me. It played the Radio City Music Hall, and I remember I was sitting at home one night, and the phone rang, and he said, "Oh, that's Charles Lindbergh." He had a very high voice, and he said, "My wife and my children, we saw the film in the Radio City Music Hall, and the film's playing there now, you know." I said, "Yes, I know." He said, "We had three of the children there, and we saw it in the afternoon. And there seemed to be quite a few people here, and I was able to hear the sound very well." He said, I like the way you tapped the oil pressure gauge when you we've just arrived home after seeing the picture at the Radio City Music Hall. He said, "I'll let my wife talk to you about it." So she got on. I'd never met Anne Moore Lindbergh, but she got on. She was very nice about it and everything, and she said the kids were there, and she said there was one thing that you might be interested in. He said, when you were right in the middle of the ocean And ice was forming on the wing, and you were losing altitude, and you were down. I think we overdid it a little in the movie there. The ice was getting thicker on the wings. You were clear down right 10 feet from the waves. And she said one of the young children turned to her and said, "Mommy, Daddy does make it, doesn't he?"
Got it.